Welcome to the Science Podcast. It's February 15th, 2013. I'm Sarah Crespi, and this is a special podcast from the AAAS meeting in Boston. Viruses can be manipulators, modulators, or mutualists. They can manipulate, such as in cases where they modify their host plant to make it more attractive to insects, or they can be mutualists, helping plants out in times of drought or excessive cold. I spoke with Marilyn Rusink of Penn State University about her group's efforts to capture the diversity of viruses and their role in ecology.
So what we talked about today was the fact that viruses have been labeled as pathogens for pretty much most of their history, but in fact, many of them are mutualists, and these have been largely ignored. They have been just passed over, and that's probably the majority of viruses that are mutualists. And in plant viruses, we know now from studies of wild viruses that there are two lifestyles of plant viruses, acute and persistent. And again, the acute viruses, because they're mostly the pathogens, are the ones that have been studied the most. But in wild plants, they're not the most common viruses. So the most common viruses in wild plants are persistent. And persistent means just that, persistent. They stay in the plant for its whole life. They're passed on for many generations through the seed, through the germline. Or if it's a vegetatively propagated plant, they just stay in the plant for basically, as far as we know now, hundreds of years, maybe thousands of years. So very long-lasting infections. These viruses haven't been studied at all, almost. And so we do know at least one case where they provide a benefit to the host. And so we're really exploring now the idea that maybe these viruses, because of these long associations, they've evolved these associations with plants that can provide extra genetic material for the plant, sort of epigenetic material that's in the cytoplasm. And so they may actually provide a lot of functions that we just don't know about yet. And then my final kind of take-home message is that plant viruses that we have studied, we know they can be mutualistic, they can confer drought tolerance, cold tolerance to plants. And so in wild plants that are chock full of all these viruses and always look beautiful and healthy, maybe there's a message there for us that we shouldn't be ignoring the viruses, because crops rarely look as healthy as wild plants. They often have epidemics of virus disease that we never see in wild plants. And so we need to take some lessons from the wild plants and look at crops. And not just viruses, but other microbes as well may actually help us out a lot with crops.
Your group has actually been doing survey work looking at the presence of viruses in two different areas of the world in wild plants. Can you share some of your unexpected findings in these surveys?
One thing that was a bit surprising was that so many of the viruses we find are completely unknown. So most of what we find, in fact, we can only label as a family because we can find kind of a relative, but they're not very close relatives. We bin them into families, but we found very, very few known viruses. They're almost all unknown viruses. This is kind of funny because a prominent plant virologist, when I started talking about doing this work, said to me, "Oh, we already have found all the plant viruses." So that was one big surprise to me, how prevalent they are, how many there are that we don't know anything about, and how many mixed infections. And I think I mentioned in the discussion that we found one plant in Costa Rica that had 11 different virus families. You know, that was kind of a surprise too. Some plants are just this whole big community of viruses. And perhaps, you know, they're like our community of gut microbes or something. This is just so unexplored.
And so what is driving this exploration? Why are people looking deeper into how many viruses there are in plants and how they relate to the environment?
Well, I suppose it's like climbing the mountain, right? Because they're there.
But why do you think that it hasn't been included in ecological studies?
Well, I think Carolyn Malmstrom actually addressed that quite well. It's kind of just a timing issue. Ecology is a very, very old field. Virology is a very young field. In fact, it's only a little over 100 years ago that the first virus was discovered. And also because I think that all of the literature was so biased towards pathogens, I think that they just never thought about including them. And then there's always been this discussion about whether viruses are alive or not, which I don't really want to get into. But that, I think, has influenced some ecologists to say that they could dismiss them because they're not really living organisms.
Right. So can you talk about some of the roles that you expect these viruses to play that are living in the wild plant species that you've looked at?
Boy, I think they could play all kinds of different roles. So the example I talked about in white clover, where we know that the coat protein of a persistent virus can affect nodulation, Nodulation is what happens in legumes. Legumes are plants like beans, and they have a very special relationship with the bacteria. The bacteria helps them fix nitrogen, so they form these nodules in their roots, which is where the bacteria live. That process of forming those nodules is called nodulation. That has to occur for nitrogen fixation to occur. So it's in a very important role for these plants. But if there's plenty of nitrogen in the soil already, then there's no reason for them to make a nodule because it's expensive. They have to put a lot of energy into it. So, and this is what this virus coat protein does. It suppresses nodulation if there's enough nitrogen. Unfortunately, it's the only really good example we have, and even that is only like maybe one or two publications. It hasn't been studied in much detail. So I just think that that opens my mind to a whole realm of what these persistent viruses might be doing. And plants are always encountering new things in their world. Where we work in Costa Rica, you know, that's a volcanic area, so there have been lots of volcanic eruptions in the past. And so these plants have had to adapt to rapid changes in climate. Geothermal areas also, those tend to move around. And so when a plant's confronted with a rapid change, it has to rely on all the genetic resources it can in its own genome. All those genes usually already have a function assigned, right? So they're already busy doing something else. So they need some new information, and I think the viruses, especially these persistent viruses, may be providing that. And the fact that they've evolved to be persistent just tells me they must be doing something important or they would have disappeared.
One thing that really stood out to me in your talk was the fact that you mentioned that there are viruses in bell peppers. Can you talk a little bit about the viruses that we're eating in plants?
Oh, you eat lots of viruses every day. So I think probably an awfully lot of the plants you eat have viruses in them. And the ones in bell peppers are persistent viruses, so they don't cause any disease or anything. But there are other viruses in peppers, too. So, for example, Tabasco peppers and other chili peppers are often infected with a virus. So, in fact, there have been people that have proposed that you could detect human contamination of water by looking for this plant virus that people eat in pepper.
Yeah, too many habaneros.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'd like to know what, you know, you and other plant virus ecology folks are planning to do next. What are the next steps for this research?
Well, I think actually what we have not done much yet, at least with my work, is, you know, we've been cataloging these viruses, but what the next place we want to go now is to really build good bioinformatic-based tools so that we can look at the ecology of these viruses. So we can ask the questions, like someone asked in the audience, you know, if we find a virus, how widespread is it? Does it only in its relatives, or is it in very distantly related plants? We have all of the data that we need to do these analyses. We have GPS locations of where we find viruses, and we have all the data on the plants, but we haven't finished building the tools to really analyze it. And I think that's our big challenge right now is the bioinformatics. I'm working with people at Penn State, including an architect, actually, who has these fantastic programs that let you do these 3D visualizations. And so I'm hoping that we can also work with that group to help develop those kind of three-dimensional looks at where these viruses are. And that will really be more beyond biodiversity into the virus ecology.
Great. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. This was fun.
That was Marilyn Rusink talking about the growing field of virus ecology. Thanks for listening to The Science Podcast. I'm Sarah Crespi. Check back on iTunes, the RSS feed, or the Science site for more podcasts from the meeting.